Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Easter Monday, the 13th of April.
It sure is. Coming up today, we chat to the man who has trained 328 Group 1 winners on the flat and wonder when will he get the chance to do it again.
Magical, who makes her way to the front of the hands of Ryan Moore to continue this Aidan O'Brien domination. Anthony Van Dyke, Magic Wand, headman from the back of the field, tries to stay on, but it is Magical with the advantage. Magic Wand is second, Anthony Van Dyke is in third, but it is going to be Magical, and she gets that elusive third Group 1 success.
With sporting fixtures still up in the air, multi-talented Lindsay Peat looks to the future, and Cork's Patrick Horgan shares his advice on how to stay sharp during this pandemic.
And Andrew Cotter, top commentator and owner of internet dog sensations Mabel and Olive. I never thought I'd be saying that on Game On. He will discuss those viral videos and what he's missing in the real commentary box.
Into the final minute and Olive in possession, but this is where Mabel is strong, chasing the game, using that intensity. We saw it in the semi-final, staring at a slightly torn cloth rabbit for over 7.5 minutes, and perhaps a few signs of overconfidence from her rival, a bit of showboating.
All that and much more between now and 7 o'clock. Get in touch by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, how was your weekend?
Yeah, it was good. I was telling you on Friday that I had to dye my son and husband's hair for the Do It For Dan campaign, and I did that, and I think I did a really good job as well. It turned out platinum blonde like Messi.
So when this broadcasting career fails, you have one waiting for you as a hairdresser.
Well, if you need some of those silver highlights, Ruby, just give me a shout. I could at least, the very least, do a video call on how to do it.
Well, actually, Marie, mine are free. They're just all natural. It's quite simple, really.
But suit
if, you. If you have figured out how to cut hair, I would be willing to take a lesson on that one.
I'm not quite there yet now.
Oh, God.
Yet.
Plenty of interesting reading and, I suppose, statements from the weekend, Marie, as to what the future holds for everybody.
Yeah, it was one of those ones, all right, where there was lots of time anyway to reflect and at least try and predict what's coming down the track. But the reality is we haven't got a clue.
Absolutely no idea. But what we did learn is that social distancing is here and here for a long time. Obviously, there's going to be no sport. There's an abundance of medical staff, which is God knows when that'll be. But hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. But Marie, I worry for team sport in the near future. I think team sport could be a long way behind any sport that's played individually or even involves animals.
Yeah, it's hard to see, especially with Simon Harris's comments today, that social distancing is going to be with us for a while yet. How teams will get back playing, because there is so much to sport now, like all levels of it. There's a lot of people involved. There's health and safety, like you talk about kids, parents, you know, there's just, it seems impossible to think how it can operate and still stick to social distancing guidelines.
I don't know, but if there's any suggestions out there, text us on 51552. We are looking for the solutions. Everyone has problems and issues. It's solutions we want. We're looking
Ruby,
for positives on this show.
You're the one who thought you could fix the fixtures, so surely you'd be able to find ways to stay within the guidelines and run sport. No better man than you.
If you're willing to give me a job and a post and the payroll that would go with that, Marie, I might take it on, but I think sorting out the GAA fixture list would be a relatively simple task compared to trying to sort this one out.
That's true. But you do have a lot of time in your hands now, so surely you could put together some sort of proposal and plan and figure it out for all of us.
I think golf would be pretty straightforward. Tennis would be rather easy. Horse racing, know how to do it. Just not certain. I think county GAA, you might be able to get around that one. Clubs, they're going to struggle, I'm afraid.
The thing about the GAA, and I think it's quite a complex one, is that because it's an amateur sport and the values and ethos of the GAA are so rooted in communities, that it'd be very hard to see people wanting it played without communities able to go and see it. So while a lot of people would love to see it come back, it coming back and nobody able to see it, especially a club, What would be the
That's
point?
What I mean, I can't see it coming back at club. And even for social distancing and the logistics of all of that that goes with it. Speaking of logistics, Patrick Horgan is involved in logistics. Maybe we should ask him. That is his.
You can form a committee here now by the end of this conversation, and you can gather all the finest minds and sort this out for all the sports fans everywhere.
I'm telling you, but I could see with enough of goodwill where it could come at a county level, and that would be on the television, and that would be something for all of us to watch. I don't see it in the near future, and obviously our COVID cases and testing will have to increase, and the tests or the positives will have to decrease before we have enough medical people to even man games like that. But looking into the future, we have to look forward anyway, Marie, don't we?
Can we look back for 1 second?
What do you want to look back at?
Today is Easter Monday. Remind you of anything?
Oh, should be Irish Grand National Day.
Are you sad?
It was a great day last year. Thank God I decided to ride Borough Saint in 2019 and retire back then. I'd have some headache now trying to figure out what to do.
Which was your favourite win?
2000 on Comanche Court was my favourite, my first. Definitely my favourite. Dad trained them. Papillon had won the English National a fortnight beforehand, and it was part of an unbelievable couple of weeks for us. So without doubt, Comanche Court is my favourite. But I did enjoy Borough Saint last year. I knew I was going to retire, and I knew I wouldn't be riding in another Grand National, so I got a good kick out of that one too.
Look at you now, sitting down, talking on the radio about sport. Worked out great.
At least I have a job, Marie. I have something to do. It's great.
That's so true.
Unlike so many other people, but I was hopeful, I suppose, looking forward, maybe a bit more hopeful than a lot of people were. And as I read Simon Harris today and President Macron's thoughts in France, I do think that sport is a bit further away than I hoped it would be.
Yeah. It's not great. Not great mood. Although JJ's song, Put Him Under Pressure, did lift me there for a few minutes, but you've brought me crashing right back down to earth now.
Marie, I drag everybody down to my level.
Works for you, though.
I don't know about that. Anyway, moving on. Where's Donica anyway? Is he still lost?
Donica is still off. He will be back on Wednesday. I don't know what he's doing. I haven't heard from him. Don't
Maybe
know.
Not.
No, he might text us 51552.
I thought you two were fairly tight.
I'm giving him a break.
Yeah, I could probably do with a break from you.
Yeah, true. Instead of me annoying him, asking him to get guests for the show.
Why not? Anyway, we have, as we said, we do have some wonderful guests lined up for the show tonight. And our first is a man who has trained, as Marie said, 328 Group 1 winners. And when the next one is going to be the question. But Aidan O'Brien, how are you?
Yeah, very good, Ruby. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great, thank God. How is all good in Ballydoyle?
Yeah, good, Ruby. Thanks. Everything good. So we're going along slowly. Everything seems to be fine at the moment. I suppose, I think everyone is hoping maybe after the next 3 weeks that some of the restrictions might be lifted and maybe racing might get going. Maybe the first week or second week or somewhere around May. That's what we're hoping, I suppose. But obviously, nobody knows, and we'll see how it goes, really.
Exactly, but even looking at that, Aidan, I mean, you have a huge operation in Ballydoyle. You have 160 or 70 horses and a huge staff force. How are you managing to cope at this time?
Yeah, sure. Everything is I suppose, with horses, it we're lucky. Social distancing can be really, like, you can really do it. There's no chances taken. And, like, obviously, horses are athletes, and when they get fed, they have to be exercised. And obviously it's a massive workforce, and it's a big industry. So we think we're doing it in a very healthy, safe way, really. We're able to do everything that we're advised to do by the government. And I suppose that's where we are at the moment. Listen, obviously the most important thing is that everybody's health comes first. And so far, thank God, everyone seems to be well, you know. So, listen, obviously, everyone has bought into it, and everyone is very serious about it, and nobody's taking any chances, will be really.
And Aidan, what about the spirits and the morale of people? Is it difficult to kind of keep them up when there's so much uncertainty and kind of no specific dates for returns?
Yeah, I suppose, Marie, it's listen, I suppose everyone is keeping is trying to keep everybody else's morale up, I suppose. We all have to look forward. And like I said, Marie, that we think the most important thing is that everyone stays healthy and everyone is very respectful of each other. And they would be things that we would have been always very conscious of anyway. But like what you said, it is right. I suppose for human beings, like to have something to look forward to. And I think that's where sport always played a big part. And especially when mental health is so important in every human being. And obviously the mental health is very connected to the physical health. So I suppose I suppose for us all, no matter what we're doing, is to have something to look forward to seeing, or like whether it's going in at home to watch a telly or to watch a match or to watch racing, you know. So I think sport, if we could get going, it would in a healthy and safe way, I think it would be a big help for everybody. I suppose one thing that we've always been very conscious of since we started training, that the amount of letters and cards we get from elderly people that would be at home, like, would be unbelievable, and nobody would ever mention that. There'd be people that would be, like, obviously confined to their home or wouldn't be going out that much, but by watching the enjoyment and the interest they get from looking at the paper and then looking at the races and looking at the characters and the people that are involved in racing, I think it's unquantified, the amount of good it does for people, really.
I think it leaves a little bit of a hole in you when you don't have that, you know, that kind of connection to the sport, the thing that drives you on all the time. And there's no getting away from the fact that everybody's missing it. And we've had so many people on over the last few weeks and they're missing different parts of what sport gave them. What are you missing the most?
Actually, I suppose, Marie, you have to have markers, and you have to have goals to work to. And like I said, we've went through all the stages with the horses, which we do every year. It's maybe five or six stages you go through before you get to the races. And I suppose our next stage is that we're working to is that maybe if everybody was happy, that racing might get going to the first week or the second week of May. And I think everyone has done an unbelievable job in controlling this and getting everybody online and everybody behind this. And I think this is probably going to go on for a long, long time. And I don't think we will be anywhere back to near normal, like, until we get a vaccine that we know that works in a safe way. And that could be a long, long ways away. So I suppose if everybody that's in managing this and we are doing an unbelievable job in it are happy to start introducing little bits of things for people to start watching. And, like, obviously life can only stay where it is for so long, but the time will come when the pace will have to pick up a little bit. But I do believe for a long time people are not going to be able to gather together or make much contact with each other for a long, long time, you know, and everyone is going to have to be very safe. But I think maybe for the mental health of people, it's a thing that, obviously everyone that's in control of is doing a brilliant job and they'll decide that. But I think for the good of everybody, it will be a help, I think, when they decide to do it.
Aidan, I know we have a great racing programme here in Ireland. We have our own Guineas and Class Derby and the rest of the classics in a strong pattern. But obviously you have travelled globally a lot. I mean, you've farmed the English classics. You've had a lot of success in France, America. You even go to Australia. Do you think internationally this year and maybe for the next 18 months you're going to be curtailed a bit?
I think it's possible, Ruby, but I think the world can't stand still for too long. For like, it is a thing that'll have to get going, and I think there will have to be a lot of protocols put in place, because, like I said, there might not be a vaccine for a year or a year and a half or even 2 years. And until everyone knows that the vaccine is proper and it's safe, we won't be able to use it, obviously. But I think social distancing is going to have to be there for a long time. So I'd say probably the world has changed forever. And people are just going to have to be very cautious and wary of each other for a long, long time. You know, I think that's the way it's going to be. But we have to be conscious as well. Like, people have to be able to live, and they have to be able to make a living, and businesses will have to be able to get going and get running again, because there'll be nobody employed, because the governments will only be able to pay so much welfare and all that for so long. But they, like, obviously welfare and all that's paid from taxes that are, that come from people that are working day in, day out, employers and employees. So it will all have to get going again. But I think it's going to be a different world for a long time, Ruby.
I want to play devil's advocate with you here for a minute. So supposing Royal Ascot does get to go ahead on the 16th of June and behind closed doors, and you're allowed to bring horses, how do you have two-year-olds who've never raced prepared for the Coventry and the rest of those two-year-old races? Can you do something different at home to have them ready to go?
I think you can, Ruby. Yeah, like, obviously we have a lot more time now, and everybody's life has slowed down so much. Like, I suppose no human being alive could have ever envisioned this happen. And everyone's life has gone so fast, so quick. Everyone was have to be here and have to be there, all with deadlines the whole time. That's all gone. Everybody is in their own place, working at their own speed, at their own time now. So, listen, and like, some people are not working and are at home, but I suppose, like, please God, those people will get back working. But pace of life is going to be much slower. And for us now, we have more time, and we have more time to put into the horses and to teach them more. And, like, obviously, there's no racing going on, because when racing starts, like, the day is double. And that's just the way it is, because everyone's, like, we've a lot of ground to cover in a shorter time. But I think it shouldn't be a problem, Ruby, because we have the time now, you know. So, but if that did happen, like, for the industry and for the people working in it, and like the spin off from it, it would be great, and I think it would help people through a lot of difficult times.
Obviously, the economy, as you said, has to start somewhere, but I'm having this argument constantly with Marie. How long, Aidan, or how much notice would you need with your horses now when racing was going to start back? Would you be able to run them tomorrow, or in a week's time, or in a fortnight's time?
Yeah, I think so, Ruby. I think it'd be no problem. Like, a week or two would be no problem. Like, the horses are at a good pitch and at a good level now, because obviously everyone's waiting on the season. Like, obviously we were in top gear, and it's like driving a car, and like, when you see it's not going to happen, you drop back down into third gear and you just give yourself a little bit more time to make it there. So I suppose the journey, say, was an hour to the start of the first race, but now it's like we drop back and we have 3 hours to cover the same amount of time, you know. So it's not a problem when they get to that level of fitness. Like, a week or two, you get them right back on the button. Like, obviously, like all the time, when you start and the season starts early here, they progress more from the runs. But this way, because we have more time, they might be a little bit more forward than anybody thinks.
And whatever happens with the next government announcement, and whenever racing does start back, 2 months of the season will have been lost. Do you see that being able to be tagged on at the other end, or would you have concerns about ground getting very soft come November into December?
Yeah, and that is definitely a possibility, but I suppose the whole thing has changed now. Like, we saw Leopardstown, I think, nearly Christmas, you were racing on good ground early in Leopardstown this year. So the climate is changing, but I wouldn't think there's any problem of getting in the races. So if racing got going, the fixtures won't be a problem. I think there's enough time there to get it in. So, and I think everyone in every walk of life will be very, I suppose, everyone will be very conscious what we have to do. And I don't think there'll be anyone putting any barrier in front of it, you know. So I think it should happen easy. And I think everyone would be very much behind whatever decision is made, will be really.
And just from a practical level, what do you think are the biggest challenges just to getting things back going again?
Maria, I don't. Listen, I think our people that have made all decisions in Ireland have done an unbelievable time. They were ahead of the curve. They were warning everybody what was going to happen. They had done all their homework on the countries that had happened before, and they believed that it was bad. Like some countries, they didn't think it was going to be so bad. But in Ireland, everybody that were obviously making all the decisions had it all right. I think they, like everyone talks about this curve, they have flattened the curve. I think this is going to be here for a long, long time, and people are going to be getting infected for a long, long time. But because it's happening so gently, please God, the people in the health system and everyone controlling it, they're doing an unbelievable job, and hopefully they will be able to continue to do that. But I think I suppose everyone will make that decision, but I think the next 2-3 weeks, if nothing drastic happens, I think it might be a decision that they will have to make to start everything rolling a little bit, because they can't stand still for so long. I think all the good work they have done, they'll make the decision and they'll know when the right time to go is. And I suppose they don't want to lose all the good work that they have done at this stage and wait too long and let the economy go right back to a standstill. So I would imagine that's what they do. Like obviously these people are very clever and very much with their finger on the button, and they'll know when to release. But I think it will happen slowly, and I think everyone is very understanding now and very conscious, and everybody knows the most important thing is everybody's health, physical health first and then mental health second. So it's a balancing act, but I'd be very confident that they will get it right.
And if and when we do get back, what are you looking forward to most?
I suppose, Marie, obviously in Ireland we have the classics. The first classic is at the Curragh, is the end of May. And then when that starts, then maybe the season could kick off. I don't know, in England, I think there's a possibility they might get going first or second week of May. I think there's, in France, they're thinking of that. May might get going as well. But I think when all those things start, the season will kick off. And we were the only country that raced kind of in semi-lockdown. And I think everyone was so conscious and everyone was so respectful of everyone's health. I thought it went very well, and everybody in HRI pulled up, I think, at the right time when the pressure came on. But they had shown that it was possible, and like how respectful and how serious everyone was about it, and how much everyone was behind all the decisions were made. So I think for everybody else, that's going to be a positive, and I think it's going to be it's hopefully possible. All right, Marie. So.
Well, Aidan, they did set a precedent before the shutdown came, because they have raced behind closed doors, so they know how to do it. And I hope, like you, that it's coming sometime in the near future. We wish you well with all your horses throughout the season, and thanks a million for taking our call.
No, pleasure, Ruby. Pleasure, Maria.
Thank you.
Cheers, Aidan.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break.
Thanks, Ruby.
Game on 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. That was Aidan O'Brien on before the break. And Marie, I love how he respects everything that's going on, but also that he's looking for a positive. He's looking into the future, looking for a way to try and make things happen.
You should sign him up for your committee.
Maybe I should.
He's very
Maybe
calm.
Maybe he is the committee.
I like that he's so calm about it as well. And, you know, he's just sets out what he thinks should and could happen, and that's it. No big drama, no big rigmarole. Just lays out why we need sport, why it's important, why the economy and needs it as well, and most importantly, why people need it.
I agree. I thought he was very calculated in what he was saying, and hopefully it'll carry some weight. And anyway, the next one joining us on the line is the man who's going to logistically put all this in place. You're probably not, but we're going to ask him anyway. It's Pat Horgan. How are you, Pat?
Hi, Mike.
We're great, thank God.
Pat, I have to say to you first, before we get into the interview, Ruby was mad keen to make sure that he was on air with you, because he says he's a former teammate. So I need to settle this for once and for all. Is he any good at hurling?
He's handy. I think I gave him a soft goal right up in the charity match in the last year. He wasn't pretty much after that, though.
It was a bit of a gimme you gave me, but I am a Kildare man trying to play hurling. Like,
got the goal and ran.
Yeah, knew when to quit.
Nippy corner forward.
Spiky one.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Anyway, how are you, Pat?
Good. Well, could be better, like, but same as everyone, I suppose. You know, just trying to do what we can, and be within the limits and all that, and, you know.
You're keeping a lot of us going, though, with your skills videos. And I'm curious, did you always have skill, or was it something you worked on as a kid, or, you know, is just hurling like a natural gift that you have?
I don't know. I just do it because I love doing it. I just dunked it back there a couple of weeks ago, and I was just messing around. And so, yeah, we got to get a few kids maybe, get them going out the back, and knock a bit of time off the day from, you know, practicing all the different skills of the game. Yeah, I just enjoy it, and not a few coming up there now soon enough. It's
How has your routine been, Pat, training-wise? I know you were out of the league, but obviously you'd be keen enough to be ready for the championship whenever it starts back.
Yeah, well, that would have been tough because, we were out of the league, but we were going to get into a routine of, you know, preparing for the championship. Like, that would have been in, 2.5 weeks now. But, just every day, same as every GA player, it takes up so much time every day from that. It's just completely taken away now, and it's just filling those gaps every day is very tough.
And have you had much guidance from your management or even from the county board? Have you guidelines set out what you have to do every day? Have you been having Zoom conference calls, or are you just left on your own?
No, the most contact we'd have now is a couple of chats over the phone, but we have to stick within the guidelines as well, and everyone's in the same boat, I could imagine, all over the country, just basically get done what you can in your own house and around your own area, but other than that, it's a complete lockdown, yeah, for us.
Lots of people use the time to work on things where they might be not as strong, or areas where they're lacking a little bit. For you, is there anything that you're working on that you maybe wouldn't have had the time before to perfect?
I suppose, you'd probably pick two or three things that you'd probably use most in a game, and try to do as best you can with the two or three things that you need. But having said that, you could be doing that for years, but as soon as there's someone tackling you or chasing you, or the ball's flying a million miles an hour in championship, it's be a completely different story. So we're all going to be starting off at the same level, when we get back, and it's just going to be building from there. It depends on how much time we get to come back. If we come back.
How long do you think you'd need? Ruby and I, we're going over all ground here, but we've been having this kind of a over and back conversation about how long players, athletes would need to get up to match speed after a layoff like this. Just kind of a run into, at this stage, you'd be looking at championship anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. Over previous years, you'd have been training since November, December, and you would have went probably all the way through, but now the situation we're in, I'd say you definitely need a month anyway.
Ruby's throwing his eyes up to heaven here. Go on.
But my God, you're all in the same boat. There's no one has an advantage over anybody else. Why do you all need to be back into peak condition? Why couldn't you go at it all in the same boat at 70-75%?
Yeah, we could do that as well, but I don't know, I just find every other year we train for nine months before championship, and the first ball comes in and my lungs are still hanging out after the first one, and so I need all the time we can get.
And Pat, what about injuries? Would you be worried that you'd be more susceptible to getting injured after not kind of going at the full tilt, the contact, the harder ground?
Yeah, that'll probably happen a lot as well when we go back. The first week of training, it's not as if you can ease back into it, because we're not going to get that much time, so fellas are probably going to be faced with a lot of injuries as well. Maybe the first week or two when we go back, because they'll probably have to load up on training as well. So fellas will be under a bit of stress,
You wouldn't be of the opinion maybe that if we went a little bit steady and stayed good and fresh, you wouldn't know what might happen, rather than piling the work in and being flat as a pancake.
Yeah, maybe you could be smooth and steady. You'd be sitting at home faster than you think, wouldn't
there? Ruby, you could get a job as a consultant here as well now for GA teams when they do go back, because you've got such strong opinions on it.
I know, but I'd be arguing the whole time, Pat, with Marie here, and especially with Dunica, but I see it with racehorses as well, and the easiest thing in the world to do is to overtrain and overburden anybody and take the edge off them, and no matter how fit they are, if they're flat, they're of no use to you.
Yeah, there could be a bit of that too. It's about, especially if they're talking, say, if the championship does get played this year sometime, I don't think there's anyone, doing too much now. It's only general fitness fellas that don't know, as if people who never played sport, if they've just done a normal, say, a walk or a jog, that's all we can do. I think we'd be fresh enough when we go back,
I can sense a little bit of doubt in your mind that the championship will come back. Are you fearful that we will not have a season?
I don't know. To be honest, I just can't see the end, do you know what I mean? It could be well, it's not going to be anytime soon, so end of the year possibly, but then again, will they let stadiums fill up like the end of the year? I'm not sure. I don't know.
And would you have any wish, want or desire to play in an empty stadium?
I couldn't see that being too exciting. Like, and even saying that, like, it would be empty, but the players that are inside, they're playing, like, they're still in contact with people in there, and we'll have 50 people at training building up to that, you know. If it was safe, like, yeah, but it would have to be safe for everyone involved, like, you know.
And Pat, you obviously work for Crane World, you're into logistics. Have you been able to continue on your daily routine, or has that changed dramatically as well?
No, like, I still go to work every day, so as soon as I come home, then it's just nothing for the rest of the night, like, just stay home. But usually that would be straight from work, straight to training, and kind of get into the routine every day, but I have to fill up those 5 hours somehow.
Pat, if it does come back and it's knockout championship, we've spoken about it a bit as well, and we've done lots of reminiscing about the great games we had in the 90s. Is it something that you would welcome, enjoy, want to be part of?
Oh, that'd be very exciting, I'd say, yeah. One life in Europe, like, that's, I'd say there'd be good buzz around that as well, like, and it's probably something that's probably going to have to happen, like, if it does go ahead, you know, they won't be able to do those group stages, and that'll take so long, so it'll probably be not going over a few weeks, like, and be exciting, I'd say, yeah.
And as a team, how do you think you'd be equipped to deal with that?
Do I see it at the moment, there's probably about 8 teams out there who all feel like they can win the championship, and we were one of them, obviously, and anytime you go, like, it's just a toss for coin and maybe break of a ball here and there, and with a bit of luck, like, we give it a rattle, but there's a lot of competition out there.
Limerick, Tipperary. God, it would really be back to the luck of the draw, wouldn't it? Which side of the draw you came out on when you get, like, imagine if Limerick drew Tip, like, that'd be some bonus to you in the first round.
Like, every team in Munster, every team in Leinster can realistically win the championship, like.
It will be exciting. What about the clubs? Because I know your club means a lot to you as well, as it does everybody. And we mentioned at the top of the show about how they're the backbone of communities, and playing club championship without crowds, whatever about intercounty, it would be such a strange thing.
Yeah, we were actually supposed to be playing. I think it's a round now, in our first round. So it seems kind of strange that we have nothing. Even for clubs, like, playing with no one in the grounds, even, very, very hard, like, especially our club, like, you know, we've good support, like, and they kind of drive us on as well in the team, you know.
Getting the feeling talking to you here, Pat, you're playing for the crowd more so than playing for yourself. You might have ridden in Turles on the way to Thursday there and see who's cheering you on.
That's kind of the buzz of it too, like, you know what I mean? That's what keeps you on edge, like, all week, like, going up against great players, obviously, and there for everyone to see. Like, it puts you on edge, like, for the week and get you nervous, you know, and that's what we play for, like.
You can imagine if the 70,000 that would be at the stadium or at home watching it on television, the people that really would know, you just imagine the pressure you're going to be under then.
I know, but being able to hear the ball coming off the hurley around the stadium wouldn't be too good, though.
And the sledging as well.
Yeah. That'll all be found out. Yeah. Hear everything.
Before we let you go, like, you have been an inspiration for many kids now who are sitting at home and they're not going to school and they're just out the back. If they're lucky enough to have siblings with their siblings, if not, it can be a very difficult and lonely time for them. But so many of them are out kicking a ball off a wall, hitting a ball off a wall. What advice have you for them who, you know, ones that want to emulate you someday?
I suppose just go to your back garden or go to your front, and all you need is a hurling ball, like, to go anywhere and enjoy yourself, and pass away the time anyway, if nothing else. But I just think hurling, like, is an unbelievable game for any young boy or girl to get into, like, and you need a lot of great people, like, through your years of being involved. And even all my best friends, like, all I met through the GA, like, so it's great for that as well.
Pat, thanks a million. Enjoy yourself. And we will hopefully catch up with you shortly again. Thanks a million. I'm going to take a little break.
For the chat. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We were just chatting to Patrick Horgan there, and I have to say he has whetted the appetite for a knockout championship, Ruby.
He has, but listen to him, Marie. I think he thinks there won't be a knockout championship.
Yeah, he didn't sound very hopeful, did he?
He did not.
After Aidan O'Brien kind of lifting the spirits, and now it's a lot of doubt.
All tumbling back down with a lot of reality there. We're not into reality on this show.
No, we're not.
We like to keep... 23 hours in a day are for reality. This hour is not.
I know, we're like dreaming of the good old days. I was trying to recall the words of the Clare songs from the 90s there. I'm going to have to go and put them up on YouTube, look them up on YouTube, the banner roar.
It would be Clare's only chance to knock out championship, isn't it?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Just meant it gives them a chance.
Sure, once they're in it, they have a chance. No matter what the competition is, Ruby.
Whatever you do, don't defend my Clare.
Exactly. So I have to say, Ruby, when I do think of how difficult this pandemic is for people, Lindsay Peat always comes to mind because she is the most sport-obsessed person that I know. She's played everything, soccer, basketball, Gaelic football, rugby. So I'd say she is really, really struggling. So I decided to get on to her and find out how she's getting on. Lindsay, how are you coping?
How are you, Marie?
Good. You, more importantly, how are you?
I'm coming back to life now, probably this week or in the last 2 weeks now, because I broke the leg as well as being in the middle of a pandemic with everyone else. So it was just laden on thick now. There was absolute sedentary behaviour now, and for the first time in my whole career, probably. So, considering I did 20 years of elite sport and should have a vast library of drills and activities and ways to keep myself busy, none came to mind, especially when I was pretty mobile. So the last 2 weeks I've started now rehabbing and coming out of the boot and being a bit more active now, so I'm starting to come alive again.
It's great crack, Lindsay, isn't it, when you're in the boot on crutches and you can't bring the cup of tea to the
counter. You know very well, Mr. Walsh, how are you?
I'm great, thank God. It's good for, I tell you, it makes you appreciate things a couple of weeks on crutches.
Doesn't it? They're an absolute balls. I got more frustrated with them than anything else.
I am glad to hear that you're human though, Lindsay, because just knowing you, like you not doing anything, it's very hard to picture that.
Oh, I wasn't, a nice person to live with, I'm sure, because even like playing with Barra, it's always chasing games or playing on the trampoline, so... Like, this situation just put me... I was like, what am I to do here? Grand, we play some Lego, but the same thing, it might do you for an hour. But I'm like, I need to burn off this energy. Now, probably the first 2 to 3 weeks, the leg was sore and I had stitches and I had to make sure it wasn't going to get infected because I had a plate put in. But after that, as the energy level started to creep back up again, I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm hopping off the walls here. So, it's a tough time for everybody, and especially, as I said, I couldn't even go for a run. I couldn't even release that energy or that built up energy to be somewhat normal and normally function in a home that I could actually concentrate. And I was wandering around the house going, okay, what could I do? What could I do? But I was doing nothing except driving myself cracked, So yeah, it's a very, very tough time.
Oh, I know how you feel. Trust me. But have your rehab program now, Lindsay? What have you got your mind set on? I know the World Cup qualifiers were supposed to be in the autumn. They'll probably be pushed back. Surely they're your target.
Absolutely. Obviously, first and foremost is that everyone, we get rid of this, we get on top of it, for the world to get on top of it, and we, just to end the fatality and suffering for those who've been directly affected, like poor Spain and Italy, obviously the families affected in our own country. Here it's been very tough, so first and foremost is the wish that we can just get on top of it now and get rid of it, and in the meantime concentrate for myself to use the opportunity and time to get back right. So I would hope in the next 2 weeks, I'm on to the next stage of rehab now starting this week, which will sort of bring in more of my A marching and really start to push on the movement and try and really get it ready for return to run possibly in the next 2 weeks if it goes well. But we'll sort of link in with the physio now by video link every week with Joe and see how we're going with that. And that's all I can do, keep up strength and stay positive probably and motivated. Is probably, like Patrick was there previous to me, it's hard to see an end. It's hard to stay motivated. But you have to, the best way to look at this, and it took me, as I said, the last 2 weeks to sort of put myself in a routine again, getting up early, making my times for work, making my time for rehab, for strength sessions. I'm very, very lucky to have gotten a turbo trainer off a friend in Joe Daly Cycles. So they, at least I have that set up that I could mobilise even the ankle first, and now I'm on to conditioning blocks that I can, they're not great, they're not like a watt bike, but at least there's something because I can't run. So it's just weekly goals now, not looking too far forward, but weekly goals that I can, you know, we're reducing the ankle, we're getting more mobility into it, we can move on to the next stage, and then to see that progress in the short term, because obviously there's no end in sight for this at the minute. We're obviously very hopeful that nothing's going to affect the World Cup qualifications, because World Rugby obviously expanded hugely on the women's game, and they brought in the repechage, which was the first time for the World Cup qualification. There's the Oceania tournament, our Europe tournament. So there's so many ways for different teams to get into the World Cup in 2021. We've already 9 teams qualified. There's 3 more places up for grabs. But now, obviously, time has been reduced. The Olympics have been moved, and I think they finish on the 8th of August. And the we're looking at September and October for the World Cup in New Zealand. So it's just, how are we going to have enough time to get everything in? So without driving ourselves cracked with that, I think if I have any advice for people, just try and keep short-term goals for now, and keep yourself ticking over in that way, and don't look too far into the future, because with no end in sight, you can forgive yourself for sort of feeling a little bit deflated, especially when you're addicted to sport like
like you are.
Yeah.
Lindsay, you're always someone who speaks your mind as well. And when you look at the baby steps that women's sport has taken in the last while, because I still firmly believe that in terms of support, they are baby steps. And you kind of take into account the struggles that are coming down the track for all associations and organisations. Are you worried that maybe women's sport is going to be one of the things that will take a hit when it comes to support and development?
Yeah. It would be a big thing, because obviously everyone, every union, every organisation is going to take a hit at the minute. Like, there's no sports, there's no TV rights, there's no generation of money and finance. And let's be honest, Marie, money makes the world go round. So when we're trying to invest in things, and especially women's sport, which we've really tried to push and invest in, when the margins are and the cloths are cut, when there's a new budget maybe released, I would hope that we're not going to be the first thing to look at, you know what I mean? Because even now, the pandemic, you could look at sort of the momentum that women's sport has generated, probably taken that hit, and we just can't, either financially or even the investment and the enthusiasm, we just can't afford to take it, because it's taken us so long to get the ball somewhat starting to roll that we just need to keep it going. And that's going to probably be our toughest task now, is to, on a financial side, on to keep players interested, like to the Olympians who have trained for 4 years now and have to train another 4 years, my heart went out to them. So there's so many people suffering from this, and I just hope that it doesn't, that it's just short term, that it'll just be a small little knock, but it won't have an overall effect. There won't be too many ripples from it. We obviously don't know what it's going to take, but I would hope that definitely women's sport isn't going to be too largely affected, because I think, as I said, we've invested too much. It's too much time in the sense to get it to where it's even just started. You know, we're only scratching the surface with this. Even the, you know, the World Cup in New Zealand was launched, the fact that the final is going to be in Eden Park, it's now gender neutral labelling, that's going to cross the board. Like, so we've made huge steps, and I just hope that, as I said, this pandemic, which no one's seen coming, though it will have its effects, I just hope it doesn't affect women's sport to the level it could do. If you look at, you know, the, as I said, the financial hit and the hit sport has taken overall with it.
Lindsay, would you be worried about participation levels? I mean, when you look at economics and finance, and when sports go back with social distancing, amateurs are going to have a choice to make. Professionals will eventually have to do it because that'll be financial. But with so much of women's rugby is still amateur, are participation levels going to be an issue?
Well, if you look at it, Ruby, like, you know, I'm very lucky in the job I'm in. Some people have been laid off. You know, rent has to be paid. So on for someone who's an amateur who's had a big knock from that sense and has to now make up time and money and finance, and that pressure comes on, like rugby is going to take to the side, and you couldn't blame them for that. So, you know, the government have been great with the money that's come across, but obviously as a nation, we're going to have to pay back that money and down the line. And listen, economics and finance isn't my area of expertise, but, you know, you can't blame people, as I said, with this, depending on what situation they're in. They're just going to have to get out working and working every hour they have when things get back up and running. And as I said, you know, to then invest time and take away more time and money possibly for an amateur sport, you can't blame them for making that decision. They have to look at their life and what's best for them. So absolutely, I can see participation levels taking a hit. Hopefully it won't be the case. But as I said, I'm in a very lucky position, but I know other people who are friends of mine and family members aren't as lucky. And the longer this goes on, the more they're going to be in financial dire straits, as are so many people throughout this. So, yeah, I can see it possibly having a big big impact on sort of the higher levels of sport, you know, the elite level, which are still at an amateur level.
Lindsay, we started out on such a positive note. Myself and Ruby seem to have that effect on all the guests today. But before we let you go, you work for the HSE, so I know you're not frontline, but you are helping keeping the show on the road.
I do. I work with the primary care unit, so better give a shout out if you don't mind to my manager and all the staff there, Mary Rochford. We work directly with the GPs, so we look a lot at their subsidies and you know, palliative care payments, maternity payments. So even though like GPs are doing a fantastic job and extra work with obviously the coronavirus and making those referrals for testing, they obviously still have other people that they have to look after who need antenatal care, who might be going through cancer, God forbid, or anything like that. So they still have their normal day-to-day job doing. So we look after getting them paid and their subsidies and keeping them running as a business. So to all the frontline staff, the GPs, anybody directly involved, like, fair play to them and congratulations on a wonderful job. And the HSE, we normally come in for, you know, we've come in for some slack over the years, but I think we can safely say that between the Department of Health, the HSE, they've really stood up and they've been tremendous through this pandemic and done all they could. So yeah, I'm very proud to be a HSE staff member. I'm not frontline, I can't take any credit for that, but I do know other colleagues and staff members who are doing an absolutely brilliant job and working every hour and really keeping the country going. So a big shout out to all the frontline staff.
Very well said. Lindsay, thanks so much for taking the call. I was just thinking, you've kind of confirmed now you're going to be staying playing for another 2, 3, 4 years. You must be nearly the
longest. Don't you dare get me in trouble. The longest. I have absolutely not.
You must be nearly the longest serving international. When you look at basketball, you look at soccer, going for I won't say what age you are, but you know, you're pushing on a little bit now. That's a lot of years you've put in.
Yeah, I'll be celebrating my 40th birthday in November this year. So that's, I don't know whether that's embarrassing or should be credited. But as I said, short-term goals, just get back after this this broken leg. And as I said, I'd committed to the World Cup qualification. So we will see what that brings and what the lay of the land is, it, as the man says.
I'd say you're better off celebrating your 41st birthday now in New Zealand next year when you're playing in the Rugby World Cup. That is,
do you think,
better.
Ruby?
I'd say.
Well, I think we'll still go now. The family will maybe go as a holiday, but I doubt I'll be going as a player now. But hopefully, definitely, we want obviously Ireland to be there.
Never say never.
Yeah, and no better woman, Lindsay. Thanks so much. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Lindsay was very upbeat, Marie.
She gave us a bit of a lift. At least we know now her recovery's going well, and she's going to be playing for another while yet anyway.
I don't envy her in recovery. God, recovery was a nightmare.
Well,
I don't miss that.
I'd say you were tough enough now on yourself, though.
I was just listening to Lindsay there and I was thinking, yeah, Gillian is listening to this. I can see her standing in the kitchen shaking her head saying, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
When you're so competitive and driven, though, like, I'd say it must be extremely frustrating not to be able to do all the things that you want to do.
It's the simple things in life that you don't realise. Like, even when you make a cup of tea and to bring it from the... don't even get me started. It's part of my life that's well behind me that I never again want to think about.
Now, another person that gave us a lift was commentator Andrew Cotter, because he posted some hilarious videos of his dog, Mabel, and dogs, Mabel and Olive, online, and they have garnered millions of views, and he joins us on the line. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show. How are you?
No worries, I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, we're good now. Yeah, we're trying to stay positive. We've had some up and down conversations about when sport is going to come back. But I have to say, Mabel and Olive, I've watched them over and over again. Anytime I'm feeling a little bit low, I turn to Mabel and Olive, which is a really nice thing that you've done, I think.
Well, it is. And I'm not a man of many nice things, but that's the thing about it, Marie. I'm quite cynical about social media, because usually Twitter in particular can be quite a toxic place at times. But for the two videos, I've had 21,000 messages have come in, and I haven't read every one of them. Obviously, that would make me slightly psychotic. But 21,000 messages, and all every single one that I've seen has been positive, and I've never seen that from Twitter before. But every message is just what you were talking about there, because we are all feeling just a little bit glum, a bit oppressed about the situation at the moment. And everyone is saying, you know what, I wasn't feeling great today, but I've just sort of laughed at this for a minute or 90 seconds or so, and so that that can only be a good thing. And I've been genuinely touched by it. I'm quite a cynical person, but I've been genuinely touched by the messages that have come in from everywhere. I mean, all around the world, about this silly video and my two silly dogs and a bit of silly commentary.
You know, Andrew, by the time this is all over, you may well have read those 21,000 messages.
Yeah, I think my mum has read the 21,000 messages. But bizarrely, it's who has... I think it got such traction because some very famous people with very large followings, retweeted it and got it out there. And when you see, the first video, which I did a few weeks ago, and Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool himself, gets onto it. But loads of other people as well, comedians that I admire. And then the second one, when Luke Skywalker's retweeting it, you think it's all gone a bit mad. I'm touched that it has... that it has touched people. It's a very strange, but actually quite a nice thing.
Andrew, you would, of course, have been in Augusta last weekend, is it now? I think it was last weekend.
Yeah, well, I would have been coming back today. Is today Monday? See, that's the thing, we don't know what day today. What is today? Today's Monday, isn't it?
Monday. Easter Monday.
Yeah, I'd have been flying back today, so,
And obviously it's rescheduled again for the autumn time, but what events you're missing? Obviously you do Wimbledon as well, you're big into the athletics, I'm sure you would have been in Tokyo. Which events are you most missing out on?
Well, at this stage, just all of them, because it's a sort of litany of events. It started really in the final weekend of the Six Nations, when I was supposed to be in Cardiff for Wales, Scotland, and then the boat race went, and the London Marathon, and like you said, Wimbledon, the Open Championship, the Masters, the Olympic Games. I mean, a couple have been cancelled in Wimbledon and the Open, and the rest have been postponed, but may end up being cancelled. I mean, the Masters in November, I think they've shoved it so far back because they can, in Georgia, just about get away with that there. But, I don't know. I mean, none of us knows, but I can't see sports. I think the Ryder Cup in September might be the first one that I end up going back to doing. So I think the one that I miss most of all would be, the Masters is pretty special, but it will be special in November. But the Masters is such a sort of special thing because, you go over there to the sunshine and the flowers and the setting, and it's just such a great tournament. But the Olympics as well, I was looking forward to doing that. It'll be here next year, all other things being equal. So, yeah, and until then, we'll just carry on commentating on pet gerbil racing or something will be next. But, yeah, I'm missing all the events, as I'm sure we all are.
If you can make gerbil racing entertaining, you will have really cracked it. But of all those tournaments you do, and which is the most difficult? Is it a marathon or the Masters? Or which ones do you find the hardest?
I find... I don't describe it as the hardest, but someone like tennis, doing Wimbledon, you know, if you're commentating alongside John McEnroe, it's hard anyway because he scares the living bejesus out of you. But also, it's because Wimbledon, tennis on television is quite a fiddly commentary. Rugby and athletics, you're going along with the crowd and the flow of it and the noise, and it's constant description and identification. Whereas tennis is, right, what can I add here? I'm just going to nip in here and add something, and don't upset John either. So just, you know, it's more sort of bitty, and it's just nipping into tiny little windows, maybe at the change of ends or after a great rally. You just nip in very quickly before the umpire says something, or just after he says something before your crowd makes a bit of noise. You've just got to judge your moment, whereas the others are slightly more freewheeling in terms of what you can say. So they all have different challenges, and that's why I enjoy them all sort of equally as well, because they're very, very different sports to commentate on. But your sport, Ruby, I was thinking, you know, some of the great, John Hunt's the great radio racing commentator over here, and he is absolutely brilliant. And he, you know, that sort of peak of when the horses go across the line, just of being at absolute peak and then falling away, that crescendo and then the diminuendo as they go, I think that's just such a great skill. And athletics would be closest to that of the sports I do. But I love listening. You know, I'm not a racing fan, but I love listening to racing commentary done well.
So do I. And it's not something I ever can see myself being able to do.
Is there going to be a trilogy, Andrew?
Well, maybe a prequel. Maybe I'll go back to see how they met. And I don't know. When you do get, I mean, honestly, every day there will be about, you know, 200 messages saying, right, when's the next one? Where's my next fix? But you can't hammer away at it because it'll only be disappointed. But I said that about second one, about not doing a second one. So if lockdown carries on for week after week after week, then for me. But I've got to think of something. I've got to think of something that they'll do. That it would be just the right thing to commentate on. So I'm training them ferociously to, I don't know, be juggling or something like that. I don't know, but perhaps, but not for a while.
You want to see if you can get NBC or someone to take it off you first. That'd be the way forward. Andrew, thanks a million for taking our call, and I hope you stay safe for the rest of the lockdown.
All right, you guys do. Thanks, Ruby. Thanks, Monique.
Thanks, Andrew. So that's all we have time for tomorrow. We'll be back with Enda Stevens, Natalia Coyle, Andy Moran, and Enda King.
Game on 2FM.